Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're talking about why you need to create a budget.
So Joel, today we're going to talk about budgets. We're going to talk about how you and I have slightly different approaches to budgeting.
Slightly different or very different?
I'm not sure.
We'll find out. I think we do have pretty different takes on budgets, and so I think it's going to be really interesting getting into it, and hopefully a lot of takeaway for people who are frightened of budgets or you know really want to do a budget. I think this podcast is going to kind of help people sort through those issues.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of the good things we've got going for us. We like similar things, but we're very different dudes.
We have a lot of same end goals in mind, I think.
Yes.
But our means of getting there often differs greatly. Yeah.
Very different, buddy.
Which is why I think it's awesome. I'm kind of more go with your gut, and you're definitely more planned out. Let's put everything.
Yeah, I'm the numbers guy.
You're like Excel spreadsheet to the max.
Empirical data, give it to me.
That's right. And as always on the Pour Not Pour podcast, we crack a beer every time. And today, Matt, you got you picked up the beer today.
Yeah, man.
And what are we drinking?
This is Tweak, a stout with coffee. It's aged in bourbon barrels. I had this a few years ago. Oh, you were actually over at our house and I gave you a sip, right? I saved some for you.
Yeah.
That's when you first had it. So my brother-in-law got this for me one Christmas. He got me a six-pack of a bunch of different beers that we don't get here in Georgia. With this being a higher ABV, this is a 16% beer. So
yeah, we get every beers here, but we don't get the big-time stouts that they make because their big-time stouts could go up to 18%. And so this one's at 16, and in Georgia, the cap on ABV is 14, so we don't get these big stouts here.
But this is, it's fantastic. Excited to have this again. It's been a while since I've had this one.
So Matt's pouring the beer right now. At the end of the podcast, as always, we'll give you kind of our tasting notes, what we think about the beer. And this is, if I remember correctly, one of my favorite stouts of all time. I'm pretty pumped to be having it again. We'll give you our tasting notes in just a little bit. I did make it out to the Avery Brewing Company I guess about a year and a half ago. It was absolutely beautiful. The beers were fantastic. I don't even know where they are. They're in Colorado. Outside of Boulder?
Obviously in Colorado.
Just outside of Boulder, I think. And oh my goodness, their facility is amazing. They make some amazing sours. Oh, so by the way, Matt, Avery just last month sold 30% of their brewery. And this is a hot topic in craft beer. We're both into craft beer in a huge way. But breweries are selling out. It seems like almost every other week you hear a report of a brewery selling part of their stake or their whole brewery to a big conglomerate. And Avery just sold 30% to a Spanish company. How do you feel about craft breweries that are selling parts or their whole business to other companies? And especially, like, I guess the big one was Wicked Weed selling to Budweiser. That kind of stuff scares the craft beer nerds.
That one's kind of big. I mean, I don't know, man. My question is the beer going to taste different?
Yeah.
It is?
No. I'm not saying it is. Okay. I'm saying that's a big question.
Because if so, then yes. Then I have a problem with that.
Right.
You know, these are companies where they've been working hard over years and sometimes decades to make something fantastic. And as the owners, my natural tendency is to think that, if you own it, this is something you've worked for and something you built. And if you want to sell a portion of it, and especially, I mean, you said they only sold 30%.
Right.
I mean, they're obviously maintaining control over the company, and
I think there's a big difference in the way that a company sells, and especially in craft beer. And we'll get to the topic at hand, budgets, in just a second. I think it in craft beer, the way you sell makes such a big difference, because if 30% to a Spanish company and kind of keeping a similar structure and same brewers in place, all that stuff, keeping the same mindset and company culture. For instance, like I think when Heineken bought Lagunitas, they kind of wanted everyone to kind of remain in place and, you know, status quo to continue for Lagunitas.
Yeah, it's more of a change of management, change in capital.
Right.
Yeah, it's under a new name, but.
But with something like Wicked Weed sells 100% to Budweiser, that people start to wonder, okay, well, you kind of sold to the people that they want to stamp out craft beer, you know.
Right. And so I've seen those articles.
Yeah, so I think it's that kind of thing. I don't think we know what the overall effect's going to be, but it's just interesting that a lot more of those things are happening in the craft beer world. And if you're super into craft beer, you do care if your brewery sells a steak. If your local brewery right down the street from you sells a 30% steak or 100% sells out to another company, it could affect the quality. And
that would absolutely be a bummer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But fortunately for us, I guess there's...
And just how it affects the industry as a whole, I guess, as well. It's something... It's hard for me sometimes to think beyond the immediate, what does this do to the beer?
Right.
And if it's fine, then maybe it's going to be okay. But I remember reading some on that and just how it affects the craft beer industry as a whole and what some of the big brewers are trying to do. So,
well, a lot of it comes down to tap space and shelf space.
Yeah.
And if you've got the big money, you can buy shelf space and tap space. And right. We don't have to get into all the nuances, but it does that kind of stuff. It affects that stuff and the bottom line for everybody involved.
Yeah.
So cheers. Tweak. Cheers,
man. Let's drink. Oh, it smells so good.
All right. We'll get to tasting notes later on, but suffice it to say at this point.
Yeah.
That's real good.
This is fantastic.
That warms you up like you're drinking bourbon too.
It's just perfectly balanced. Right. Yeah. We'll talk more about this later.
Yeah. All right, Matt, moving on to the topic at hand today, budgets. And for a lot of people, that's a really scary word. So let's kind of define it. And talk about why maybe it's not as frightening as it initially sounds.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. So to me, a budget is just us deciding like where we're going to spend the money before you actually spend it, right? It's not some sort of list of rules that you have to follow or abide by or you swear to. It's just having a plan. That's the easiest way to describe it. It's saying that this is how much income I'm going to have for the month. It's listing out your expenses. It's deciding where you're going to spend that money and then just sticking to it. It's just, I mean, literally it's just a plan. You get to decide that plan, right? It's not like somebody else is going to say, oh no, you must do it this way. Well, certainly there's tactics and ways and approaches to creating a budget. But when it comes to the actual amounts within the budget and in your different categories, you're going to put your dollars on the things that you value. And that's what makes it yours as well.
So what would you say to someone that thinks that a budget is limiting?
No, a budget is not limiting per se. You're not sort of keeping yourself from doing things unless that's what you want to do. You're deciding now what you're going to do down the road in the weeks to come in that month. And so if you know at the beginning of the month that like, oh, I'm going to want to do these other things because I'm not going to behave and I'm going to spend my money as soon as I get it. Well, it's good at the beginning of the month to sit down and think ahead a little bit. Really, all it is just thinking ahead and making a plan.
Yeah, I think most people think that a budget is about depriving yourself. So you spend as little money as possible and you allocate it to the right places. But really, when it comes down to it, you're living a water and gruel lifestyle to try to skimp by, because that's what it takes. That's what budgeting is. It's that sort of a process. It's a slog.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's probably where people get bogged down initially. I don't want to do a budget because it means it's going to restrict me in all these ways.
Yeah. I want to be able to go out and eat.
Right.
Yeah. Folks are like, well, I still want to go and get my nails done or whatever arguments there are against it. That's what keeps people. I think a lot of times, right. That's what keeps people
totally
from doing it.
But. And the trick is, I guess, that you have to prioritize those things. And some of those things you will have to cut back if you want to meet other goals that you have. So you have to make decisions sometimes now in the short term that will impact your long-term budget. And so it might take cutting back on certain things that you deem not as important in the immediate in order to achieve that long-term success. If you want to take a trip next year to Europe, you can start budgeting
saving now. Absolutely. As opposed to the typical finance it sort of model is don't plan ahead. You do it when you want and then you end up paying for it after the fact. But what are you also paying for after the fact if you've financed it? You're paying for financing. You're paying interest. Yeah, you're paying interest on it as opposed to saving it ahead of time. So it's almost like a reverse payment program.
Yeah.
Instead of paying a bank or a lender after the fact, you're just saving up and paying yourself ahead of time.
I think one of the most difficult aspects of budgeting for me sometimes is I forget to make it personal. And I think that when it comes down to it, I'm better at budgeting when I truly make it personal to what I need. And sometimes I guess we all do this. We begin to think, well, this is what everyone else is doing, or this is what my budget should look like. But really, you have to make it personal. And if you want to drop $4,000 a year on travel, you can do that.
Oh, yeah.
But you just need to budget for it.
Yeah, just put it on there every month that you're going to set aside however many, you know, 4,000 divided about by 12 months. And now you know that like every month we need to set aside this much money towards that one trip at the end of the year or for the two trips that we have. If it's a priority for you, man, make it happen. It's just about making those decisions before they happen. That way you have time to prepare for it. So do you always budget? So like before, and well, specific to before you and Emily got married, did you budget back when you were single?
No, I didn't budget. And I'll tell you why. And Emily and I've had a difficult time at times trying to figure out budgeting in our marriage, because I do have a kind of this like mental roadblock aversion to budgeting. And part of it is, and I wrote an article actually a few years back on my personal blog about why I didn't budget. And I think it's okay for some people at different times in life to not have to budget, but not for most people, only for a few. And the reason I think it worked for me is because I was so frugal. I was so into not spending money for quite a long period of time. And I liked seeing my balance grow every month. Mm-hmm. I just didn't really buy needless things. And lifestyle creep wasn't really a factor for me at that point in time.
Yeah, you were living so cheap that making a budget for you maybe wasn't the wisest use of your time, because it's fine. You were spending nothing on everything.
Right. Anyway. And I felt like, I think at that point in time, I was probably like working more hours and so less time to spend. Right. And I was just really kind of focused on building something. I see the need for a budget in our lives more now than I have in quite some time.
Yeah.
And so this next year, it's going to be a really big focus for us to actually kind of adopt a budget again, mm-hmm. and try to, because we have a goal in mind, mm-hmm. because actually, and here's the goal. We bought a rental property recently, and we did take out a small portion of our home equity loan in order to put the 25% down to get this rental property. And so we want to pay that off
in
6 to 8 months. Yeah. We want to pay that off quickly. And
gotta have a plan if you want to do that though.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. And so we're like, we're not terribly uncomfortable with it being there, but we'd rather get rid of it. And the only way for us to do that well, I think, is to budget for the first 6 to 8 months, get back into it, pay it off quickly. And then, you know what? I think that we're just in a phase where we're going to be budgeting for a while. But then maybe at some point we'll be in another phase of life where we don't feel the strong need to budget and sit down every week or month, mm-hmm. and do that. But we are in a phase in life where we're getting back into that, and we're really excited to get back into it.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing with that is, especially if you have a partner, especially if you have a wife, and this is where it came down for me and Emily, where budgeting actually really began to help us get on the same page about money, was that I was so frugal and she would feel bad if she spent money, even though like I didn't want her to feel bad. I didn't want her not to be free to make that decision to buy something. But because of my mindset and her knowing my mindset about money, she felt uncomfortable making that spend, buying that item of clothing, mm-hmm. or going out to eat. It was always kind of, oh, well, should we go to the restaurant that's where we're only going to spend like $40? Or is it okay if we go to the restaurant where we're going to drop $75 tonight? And because it wasn't down on paper and it wasn't something that we discussed, it was this thing that we just didn't talk about, and it was this unsaid like difficulty in our marriage. And so that's where budgeting for us really comes out. If it was just me, I could get by without a budget.
Right.
But because it involves my wife and feelings and how we process things together, it's really, really helpful for us to be on the same page.
Yeah. For us, it was, Kate didn't want to do it at all. Like she saw it sort of like we talked about initially, where it was this thing where we're going to be enslaved to the numbers and whatever the charts or whatever the numbers say, that's what we have to do. So after talking with her about it and learning what it really is, she saw basically the freedom in that. And so she saw that, okay, at the beginning of the month, we're both going to talk about this and we're going to decide together what we're going to spend on whatever it's going to be, say, you know, going out to eat. Well, then once you've decided what that number is, like we have to, I mean, and this is how we approached it, was that we had to spend that money because we've decided that's what we're going to do. And so there was no guilt at all associated with, say, going out to eat. It was a matter of, we decided that this is what we're going to do. So let's do it. Let's have fun. And once that sort of clicked for Kate, then we were able to man, totally get on the same page. She saw it as a tool that sort of got rid of that guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you let things roll over from month to month in your budget? Let's say you and Kate each have like a personal expense account and you each have a certain amount allotted into it where Matt can buy whatever he wants that month that's $50 or under. But let's say you're saving up for something that's $300. Do you roll that over? How does that work in your budget?
Yeah, so we do roll it over. So we don't have a monthly we don't have a monthly amount where we're basically forcing ourselves to spend that, and if you don't, then it's just sort of gone. That kind of goes for us. We've got this overly complicated budget because I'm a nerd, but where we each get a certain amount that we've decided that we're going to get every month, and if you spend it, then you spend it. But otherwise, for the most part, we're saving up in those buckets is another way to look at it. That's how we've talked about it before as well, that we're sort of letting the bucket grow because we know that, you know, in my case, I'm going to get a bike and that's going to cost $1,000-$2,000, and I'm not going to be spending a whole lot of money on other things.
All right. What if you buy that item early on in the year? And so you're in negative in your personal account on mm-hmm. the budget. How do you reconcile that?
So it's just sits there as a negative. That we try not to let that happen, but when it does, it sits there as a negative, and then it slowly ticks back up as the months progress. And yeah, in general, we try not to dip down into the red.
It's a general good rule of budgeting.
Yeah,
good rule of thumb. Don't get in the red.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why, right? It's just if you're on the same page with your spouse, it helps to work as a team. When you can work as a team, you're just going to be able to get so much more done. Having that accountability to your significant other. And even if it's not a spouse, or I think having a friend or somebody that you can sort of talk to and about your goals, I think that's really helpful as well. I don't think there's very many people at all that do that. But the reason I say that is because this is something that not just couples can do, but
yeah,
somebody that's not in a relationship as well.
Well, it's interesting. I feel like a lot of people actually have found kind of some therapy in starting like a blog to document how they're doing with budgeting.
And yeah, so I've seen those.
Yeah, actually a lot of successful online entrepreneurs started off as budget bloggers, talking about getting out of debt and how they kind of pulled themselves up out of their debt hole, and now they're budget masters. And so those people are always interesting to read, and there's just a lot of people like that. So maybe for you, maybe it's not even public, but maybe it's just journaling about it. Mm-hmm. But writing it down and keeping track of your progress,
yeah, and having some sort of visual record of what you're working towards and what you've done. I mean, for me, so I started making my budgets back in 10 years ago, right at 10 years ago now. What's kind of crazy is that I can look back and see what I was saving towards back then, see how much I was spending. It was significantly less than what we spend now as a family of five.
Yeah.
But it's actually, I mean, it's really cool, I think, to be able to, it's sort of a time machine in a sense, you know, to kind of be able to go back and look and say, oh, we thought this was such a huge deal. It was not. Or we saw, you know, this came up and this kind of wrecked us for a couple months there. But in reality, we saw how it kind of ended up being okay. And we kind of stuck to the plan. And because of that, we're where we are today. So,
yeah,
I wanted to talk too about how just in general. So, we're talking about why you need a budget, right? So as a tool, what a budget does essentially is takes this plan that you want to have, right, in regards to your finances and your money. And it takes it and it links your plan that you have in your head to your behavior and how you actually live throughout the month. Because we can think that we want to do something all day long, but if we don't really have a plan for it or have it written down, we're just going to do what we're going to do. Our friends are going to go out and, oh, this is coming up, or, oh man, this show is in town. Oh man, there's so much fun stuff I want to do and things I want to buy. And you misbehave. And then you look at back at the end of the month and you think, oh man, gosh, where did all my money go? The budget is there to keep you in line, and it's yourself keeping yourself in line. It's not like it's somebody else. You get to do this to yourself. It's like your past self telling your future self how you're going to behave and sticking to it. So Joel, are you are you naturally a spender or a saver? I mean, and I ask this because earlier this morning we were having a conversation and you were taking some Enneagram
Enneagram
or something. Yeah. And you're talking about how, oh man, maybe I'm not actually a sort of a minimalist saver, kind of frugal type.
Right.
Do you think you're naturally a spender or a saver?
So I think deep down at my core, I'm probably a little bit of a spender. Mm. But I think some of the circumstances that happened in my life and in childhood have driven me to be frugal, to be a saver, to desire security in that way. I don't think I'm naturally this minimalist, frugal guy, but that is part of me and it's ingrained in me at this point because it's something that I've learned over years and years and years.
Yeah. It's kind of it's
living
kind of
that way.
Yeah. It's kind of shaped you to kind of be who you are today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you, I got to imagine that you are to the core of that.
Man, it's tough because there's things that come along and I think, oh, I need this, or, oh, I really want this for me. I want this for our family. These are now priorities. And a lot of times those things involve a lot of money. And so therefore we're spending money, but kind of left to my own sort of my own devices. And if it was just me, if I was just a single dude, I would be a sad single dude living by myself, not spending any money, without a life, and nobody would want to be my friend. Dude, I'm serious. Having Kate to kind of balance me out in that sense has been very good for who I am. But I do, so because of that, yes, at my core, I do think I'm a saver. I'm a organized saver, and the budget helps me get there.
All right, well, let me give you my quick breakdown, my approach to budgeting, how, when I do it, how I've done it, how Emily and I've done it together.
Yeah, because you're more of a free spirit when it comes to numbers. Yeah. And you mentioned going with your gut.
Yep.
You think that's how you approach it?
Yeah, pretty much. So I'll say, but when we are, and Emily, just like Kate is for you, Emily's a great balance for me, and she really helps me stick to a budget, look at the numbers, think through, especially if we're on a mission, on a goal, and then how to kind of feel free inside of that. And so the way we approach it, there's a bunch of different apps, as we've said, a bunch of different websites, a bunch of different formulas that people use. I use Mint, the Mint app, mint.com. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the most widely used budgeting tool.
Yeah. We tried it for a while there to see if it would work for us.
Yeah, I think for us, we use Mint specifically as a way to just track all of our expenses. So we use credit cards and checks for pretty much everything, and like almost no checks anymore. It's pretty much all credit cards, right?
Yeah, man, get those points, get that cash back.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but that can be a problem for people who, because a credit card doesn't register the same mentally when you make a transaction as actually taking cash out of your pocket and handing it to somebody.
Right.
So that's, again, if you're going to be using plastic, the budgeting really can kick in. If you're not super frugal, it's really important because you could find yourself spending a lot more freely using plastic as opposed to cash.
I totally believe that. As far as like the emotional impact.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You just swipe it and
forget it.
I don't even have to swipe it anymore. You just hand it over and like,
or online, make it an
barista
online
that swipes it for me.
How easy is it to make an online purchase now? Or like Amazon one click or whatever. There's all these kind of things that make it so easy. And then 2 days later, the thing shows up at your doorstep and you forget you just spent $28 on it. You forget that you even ordered it sometimes. But I feel like that's a tendency for people, right? Especially in today's day and age with easy online ordering. That's just kind of goes hand in hand with it. All right, so I use Mint and we basically filter all of our credit cards in there. And
so use it sort of as a tracking
mechanism. And so in an instant, I can get a snapshot of kind of where we're at for the month, you know, up or down. It's got the cash balance versus the credit card, how much we owe on the credit cards right then. Obviously, we don't carry a credit card balance, but it just gives me a snapshot of kind of where things are at. And then on top of that, we can, at the end of every month, go through all those transactions. Mint doesn't do a great job of categorizing it.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was one of the things I remember being annoyed with, having to manually say, no, this actually needs to go here now, where like the very next time there's a purchase there, it needs to go to this other category. It kind of bounces back and forth.
Yep. And so that can be a tough one.
Okay.
That's why we kind of actually go manually through all the transactions and then enter it into Google Sheets. And we kind of sit down and then we're like, okay, well, what'd you buy here for this amount? Because we don't always tell each other before we buy something that's 10 or 20 bucks.
Yeah.
So then we can kind of say, okay, you're at 80 bucks for this month and we're at this much for groceries. And so we try to sit down once or twice a month, go through it. So we're on the same page and kind of see where we're at. Mm-hmm. And that's the easiest, simplest way we found. There's all these other, I've heard so many people rave about, you need a budget. It's also called YNAB for short. So there's a lot of people that rave about that budgeting app and website. We've just found that Mint for us, it's simple. We've already kind of got everything flowing into there. And then we just use Google Sheets to kind of track and see where we're at for the month and then overall and how we're progressing that year our budgets.
Okay. So then on the Google Sheet, is that where you set your how much you're wanting to spend in different categories? So say with groceries, so at the beginning of the month, you already had that set.
Yep.
Okay.
So we know, we're going to drop $475 a month on groceries and we're going to do $150 on entertainment, which includes our date nights,
right?
Every month, or this is how much our mortgage is. Obviously, the set things like that, and so that's kind of how we use it. And then at the end of the month, we've got $50 left for going out, or we've got $5, and so we stay in and make dinner.
Gotcha.
All right. So, what about you? What's your approach?
So we take the more nerdy. All 100% numbers approach. So basically, since the beginning, when I first created my first budget, I've always created a zero sum budget. So meaning that at the beginning of the month, I set my projected income, list out all my expenses, and literally at the end of the month, it should be zero. So your income minus your expenses equals zero. And within those expenses includes goals, right? So it's like saving for that vacation or that trip. In addition to investment savings and retirement and things like that, I've got those within my, I call it an expense, but it's just a way for me to say that my goal is this month to say, to put aside $800 towards my Roth IRA. So those numbers are also included in the expenses. So my goal is that at the end of the month, there's not a single penny. I mean, literally, there's not a single penny that is unaccounted for because I've essentially spent it already at the beginning of the month with the goals that Kate and I have set in mind. And then we move numbers around month to month if we're like, well, this is going to be a month where we're going to focus on this maybe a little bit more, or say, oh, actually we're going to need to ramp up our savings towards vacation because we didn't take into account the beach was going to be more expensive or something like that. I don't know. That's the general approach for me. And the tools I use then for that, Excel. I mean, just a basic Excel, multiple. I got two or three spreadsheets.
And do you just pour over all your statements in order to that all into Excel?
About once a week, if I'm diligent and on top of it, once a week, I just export stuff and just plug it into our spreadsheets. And then I do manually move them.
How long is that process?
When I do it once a week, maybe like 30 minutes.
Okay.
Takes me about 30 minutes to look over those numbers, plug those into the proper categories. And then, Kate, I mean, we don't even have meetings anymore. I send Kate a text. I'll say, budget update, dash, dash, dash. And then I say, grocery, $132 under. Entertainment, $150 under. Gas, $40 under. Things like that. And that's basically what kind of helps dictate and point us in the right direction for the rest of the month.
All right, but let's say this. So let's say, particularly like on a line item like gas, you're doing a zero-sum budget, but if every money should be at the end of the month directed somewhere, what happens if you've budgeted 70 for gas and you only spent 35, or vice versa, you went on a road trip and you spent more?
Right.
How do you handle that in the budget and where does that money go?
Yeah. So
what does that look like?
So in the first example, if there's additional money left over, that's just money that it's just additional money that's going to go into whatever we decide it's going to go into. So typically it's
the following month or that same month?
No, that same month. Yeah. Okay. So in say that specific month we had planned to set aside $800 to go to a Roth IRA. Then if we're $40 under in gas, well, instead of 800, it's 840 that month. And so we just kind of make some changes on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously sometimes you just have to drive somewhere, right? And so sometimes we do go over, but like you mentioned, the road trip, well, that kind of comes out of vacation. And so that's something we've already planned for. We know that, okay, this is going to include all of our expenses for that trip. And so that's how we, reconcile it in that case.
All right. So here's another interesting question. And there's probably a lot of people listening that are in the same position as Matt is. I am a regular 40-hour week employee somewhere with a paycheck that I can count on that looks pretty much the exact same every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But you, sir, have vastly different incomes from month to month. So what do you, how do you budget when you make $10,000 in 1 month and $2,000 in the next?
Yeah. So that's when margin comes into play. So sort of like you mentioned, you're asking about the sort of personal categories with like, oh, okay, so do you roll over? You know, like if you don't spend all of your MAP money for the month. And so the, my answer to that was yes. Same thing kind of goes. So we have, I mean, basically we kind of roll it into what we call our emergency fund, but we have a more loose, sort of liberal emergency fund. And what that acts as is our margin. So in the months where we do have that additional income, right? So say like the $10,000 month, that additional money, we know that that's a fat month. It's not like we're like, oh man, this is our life now. Let's get used to spending it all. We know that we have to set aside some, like a good chunk of that for some of the leaner months. And so when that happens, we basically stockpile our emergency fund a little bit, knowing that there's going to be some leaner months ahead. And that way, when those months do inevitably come along, we're able to kind of dip into that and it all balances out. It would be nice to have a consistent income because it would absolutely make budgeting easier. But for us, I mean, yeah, I've been doing this for so long now with 10 years. Honestly, I don't even really think about it.
So here's something that's always kind of been hard for me when it comes to budgeting, because mm-hmm. I'm good at like saving up money, not spending a ton, and always saving every month and not spending more than we make. What happens when, and some I touched on earlier, make your budget personal. For me, we try to allocate money to the things that we love. And there's a few things that we have set aside. Like, for instance, I have three things that I'm okay spending more money on than probably most people do. And those three things are craft beer. Obviously, we're drinking a good one now. Folk art. I love folk art. And so I buy a piece every year, sometimes two. We, Emily and I, just share a love for folk art. And travel. We travel usually one domestic and one international every year. Mm-hmm. We try to allocate money for those things. But if there's a deal on something, I have this kind of thorn in my side that I have to, I almost have to pull the trigger. And so let's say there's a great deal on a trip somewhere where tickets to Barcelona, Spain are normally $1,100 and there's a round trip ticket for $450.
Right.
I just have a built up savings. Can I pull the trigger on it? That's the thing. I guess it's like a different way of like brain compartmentalization.
Yeah.
And my brain isn't saying I budgeted it out over 12 months. It's saying I put all the excess in the savings account and I'm spending out of there. Right. That's kind of the way my brain thinks about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, so yes, we try to take advantage of the deal. I'm with you. We're not so rigid that when we see a fantastic deal or an opportunity come along that we're like, nope, we're still working towards that, you know? So again, like you mentioned, well, what if there's a big purchase? And I mentioned how when I got a recent bike that I purchased, it took me into the red. So that's still like something I'm still slowly kind of building, you know, rebuilding and getting back up to zero. And then beyond that, trying to start saving again to be able to get something else I want. So when we see a deal on a flight, even though we necessarily may not have all of that money saved up for that vacation,
it's not in the vacation fund specifically.
It's not in that category, exactly. Again, we have enough margin in our, you know, in our emergency fund that we've stockpiled because we know that we do that in the fatter months. We're able to kind of dip into that. So it's not like we're overdrafting our account or anything. We're sort of overdrafting that little category.
Yeah.
And that category is sort of hurting there for a couple of months until we're able to kind of rebuild it. But we're never overdrafting. It's not like our account balance is ever zero or honestly even close to that because we like to maintain a cushion.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to put it. Never go into credit card debt for lifestyle.
Oh, no way.
Never over debit your account for lifestyle. If this is a decision and you have the savings built up to make that choice and pounce on the deal, I think it's okay in moderation with the knowledge that you immediately want to start building that back up.
Right.
When you get back from your trip or whatever it is, if it's the bike that you bought or the trip you went on, immediately you start working towards mm-hmm. building that cushion back up. But if you have that cushion, I think you need to be able to give yourself a little bit of freedom. I think probably a really important caveat for people to hear in that is if you're going to do that, make sure it is for one of those personal categories for which you put major importance. I think, for instance, let's say, you know, we just recently got done with the Christmas shopping season, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, blah, 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 blah. And people like bought a bunch of shit they didn't need because it was a deal.
Mm-hmm.
That is where you get yourself into trouble. Is you just bought an Amazon Kindle and a Fire Stick and a blah, 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 blah. All these things that you had not budgeted for, didn't think you needed until the deal popped up. And if you're super into electronics and that's one of your line, like that's one of your calling cards. Hey, that's what I'm super into. That's personal for me. That's a line item in my budget. It's okay to make that purchase within reason. Even if you go over, for us, it's travel, right? That's what we're talking about, our bikes. But if that's your thing, that's okay. You need to want to replenish it quickly, but don't do it for something that's not one of those main categories, those main things that drives you.
Oh yeah.
Because that's what leads to the hangover and to the ruination of your budget. I feel like if you're pouncing on deals from all these other categories that you don't really care about in the end.
And what you're describing too, basically, is how we approach money in general. Like, we're not so by the numbers that we're just trying to be rich. Like, that's not our goal, is to amass tons of money. One of our goals is to sort of live a moderate life where we're spending money, you know, some money now. We're trying to save, obviously, for the long term so that we have money down the road to either become financially independent on or to retire.
Or buy a yacht.
Is that your thing? You're going to be the yacht guy?
Could be someday.
But
couldn't you see me with one of those little sailor hats or whatever?
If somebody else was driving the yacht, maybe, sure. We're trying to find ways to focus on the things that matter to us now and to also plan ahead so that we're not broke down the road.
Totally agree with that.
Yeah. We're not so extreme that we're just only saving now and not spending a single dime. That's where I was maybe 10 years ago. And we're not also obviously not advocating a lifestyle where there's just excessive consumption, where you're just making these silly purchases that aren't going to mean anything to you. And even like a couple of days later, like you said, where you kind of have the purchase hangover and you're just thinking, man, why did I do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if you find yourself continually going over like that, making purchases that then you later regret, there's a couple things that you can do to kind of change your mindset. You can change some of your habits, some of the ways that you shop online, some of the ways that you shop in stores. And even if you buy something, you can give yourself like a 48-hour period or something to decide, without taking the tags off and tossing the receipt, whether you really want to keep it. There's a couple things you can do in your life to prevent yourself from, maybe you made the mistake in the heat of the moment, but then you can go return the item if you decide that it doesn't fit your budget and it doesn't fit your lifestyle.
So, you know, you mentioned how you guys, essentially, you kind of track all of your spending via Mint, and then you kind of plug that into Sheets, on the Google Sheets. So, I mean, how do you actually go about creating your dollar amounts for your different categories, like within your budget?
Yeah. Well, so obviously there are certain items that are fixed.
Like your, mortgage, right? Yeah.
Right. So insurance, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones basically start off by looking at previous months. Oh, hey, how much did we spend on groceries last month? Was it, did we feel like that's normal? Hey, how much did we spend on entertainment? Oh, hey, well, we want to do more in this. Can we cut down on that a little bit? Be a little more focused on our entertainment spending so that we can add a little more towards the paying off debt bucket or whatever. And like I said, we don't really have, we just have mortgage debt. That's it, except for this small home equity. And that's what we're going after. Oh, and a little bit of Emily's student loan. So those are the two things that we want to tackle this year. She's got just,
oh man, knock it out.
Like $5,000 or $6,000 left.
Oh, it's nothing, right?
Yeah, no. It's not very much.
Get and after it.
Super low interest rate, so it's not like we're terribly concerned, but we're kind of like, let's do this. Like, 2018 is going to be the year of just like kicking all this out.
Eliminate a bunch of that. Yeah. It's going to feel so good.
Yeah, so it's usually based on previous months and on then, okay, can we pinch a little more there so we can breathe a little more here? Mm-hmm. Priorities shift a little bit, or I recently shopped our insurance, so that dropped a little bit. So we can decide to put a little bit more in this bucket if we want, or save a little more. Yeah. So it's kind of that combo of history versus where we desire money to go in the future.
Yeah, your goals kind of moving forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that, so that's, I think that's true as well for anybody that doesn't have a budget. And so you're saying based on previous months, if you've never even done a budget ever, that's, I think that's exactly how you need to start as well. I mean, maybe that's what you're saying, right? But
yeah, that's how we initially came up with the numbers.
Exactly. Yeah. So instead of, like, you can think through that, like, oh, this is what I want to spend, or this is what I think I'll spend this month on groceries or entertainment, things like that. Like some of the more variable expenses, right? The things that you, that are kind of more dependent on your behavior. Like, it's so much more effective to look at what you've actually done, because you can think all day long that this is what I would like it to say.
Yeah.
But what's more effective and just honestly easier is just to look at what you've done. Like, let's look at your past. Let's look at your patterns. And then you can kind of base your numbers around that. And obviously, hopefully, from your first one there, once you have your income and then you've got your previous month's expenses, hopefully you're not spending more than you're actually making, because then there's going to be some serious changes that need to happen. But step one, just do it. You know, make it happen. Like, there's never going to be a perfect month, because every month is going to be different. Like, there's always going to be something that comes up that you're going to think, oh, but this isn't something that I'm going to have to deal with all the time. Well, there's always going to be something. So just start, you know, start moving forward, put the numbers down, start tracking those expenses, and then, and checking in with it as well.
Yeah.
For us, it doesn't do us very, very much good if we wait till the very end of the month before we look at where we've done. It's more of a sort of, oh, how did we do this month? As opposed to, how are we doing? How can we modify our behavior to make sure that we're sticking to our goals and staying on track to what we want to do?
Yeah. So there's two things I want to say to that. One, I think it's probably, like you said, it's really important to do a check-in. Maybe, I mean, every week would be ideal, but most people,
honestly, we don't, I feel like we kind of do it every 10 days.
Yeah. Like, but let's say you do it every 2 weeks, right? Like middle of the month, end of the month. That's probably a great way to do it. That way, if you're by yourself or with somebody else, you guys can update each other, or you can just be updated about your individual budget. But being able to look at it twice a month, probably the most helpful way to do it. And
it's better than looking at it, you know, zero times a month, that's for sure.
Right.
Like, anything that anybody does is going to be better if it's something that you haven't done before.
Yeah.
Right. So just as long as you're moving in the right direction, man, I'm happy.
And it'll probably take you longer at the very beginning to
every time. Oh, yeah.
You know, and, but now that you're kind of budget master, you know, 30 minutes every 10 days, that's not that bad.
Yeah.
But it might take you longer. I mean, you might need to set aside one night of the week or one night every other week where you're like, I'm not watching Netflix. I'm not doing anything. I'm checking my budget out.
Yeah.
And one of the other things,
part of being an adult, right?
Right.
Just not watching TV and instead doing the things that you don't really want to do.
That's, I know. It's a bummer, but someone's got to do it.
Yeah. It's the kind of adult stuff that sucks.
But yeah.
Honestly, I say it sucks, but in reality, I kind of, when I sit down and put on some music and start plugging in some numbers and seeing where we're at.
I know you love it.
Oh man, that's put on some slow jams and start getting in with the numbers there.
One other thing I want to say too, I think it's really helpful to have kind of like a big goal in mind with your budget. And depending on what phase you're in, where you're at in your life and where you're at with your debt levels, it could be something different. But for Emily and I, this next year, like I said, we want to kill that home equity line. It's not that big even, but, and then we want to kill the rest of our student loans. And if we can do those two things in 2018, how good are we going to feel at the end of it? And so wherever you're at, whether it's eliminating student loans or another debt in your life, or whether, you know what, you're doing pretty good with debt and you just want to, you want to be able to take an awesome vacation to Europe, or you want to save it for that new bike, whatever it is, if you can have a big goal, like an
overarching plan. Yeah.
That can help keep you focused. And no matter where you're at, you can come up with that big goal this year. Hey, I'm going to set this goal for myself for 2018. And that's going to help me stay focused throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, it's hard to stay focused.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's sort of the why am I doing this?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Like, the budget is there as sort of a tool. Like, right. It's like a month to month. This is like boots on the ground, like getting kind of down and dirty with it. But it's easy to kind of get lost into, why am I even doing this? Like, just
right,
let me just do what I want to do. But then if you're able to step back and sort of look at it for maybe, you know, maybe for a lot of folks, yeah, it's the year. Like, what do I want to accomplish this year? And having goals like that, then you can say, oh, Well, this is why I'm doing this, because I know that if I set aside $1,000 every month, well, shoot, I can do a lot with 12 grand by the end of the year. Like, right. Think of the stuff I could either pay off, or think of the, you know, how much more I can put towards retirement, or, you know, investment, or in a, another rental property, like you mentioned earlier. That's the kind of stuff that you, when you get to the end of the year, you're stoked about, because you know that you've set these, every month you've set these goals with, you know, within your budget to achieve.
Yeah. And it might not be the sexiest goal. Somebody's goal might be a freaking trip to the Galapagos Islands and swimming with turtles.
Yeah, that's nice.
And that's cool. But yours might just be to have an emergency fund because you don't have one yet.
Yeah, having some more margin in your life that allows you to take advantage of, say, some of these deals that pop up, or just to not be stressed, you know, to know that you're not living paycheck to paycheck. I think for a ton of people would feel amazing. I know it would feel amazing. Yeah. I've talked with folks, and I know that having that sort of hanging over them where they know that if they don't get paid, they don't get their next check, all of a sudden they're upside down on stuff and in a world of hurt. You can't make unrealistic, crazy budgets, and you can't make changes from month to month that are huge. Like, you just need to make these, you know, these slight tweaks and these slight changes to where you know that if your goal is to, say, save more, and you kind of want to tighten the belt a little bit on some other categories, well, make sure you make small changes. First of all, once you base your budget on your previous month's expenses, like, that should be pretty dang realistic. And from there, I think you should most definitely be able to make slight, you know, these small changes and tweaks to bring about the changes and goals that you're trying to achieve.
There might be some really big changes that you haven't considered. Maybe you think that this line item in your budget, maybe you haven't shopped your insurance in a while. I think there might be some big moves that you can make in that budget that you just haven't considered to help you make the other line items. And again, look up, make it personal. Look back to your goals. What are your goals? If you don't care about driving a fancy car, sell your 2012 vehicle, ride in a 2002 vehicle, and save a bunch of money on insurance and on taxes, and start changing some of those things, some of those bigger things, bigger picture things that are actually taking a big chunk out of your monthly budget. And that can help you get your budget in line, I think, if you find yourself butting up against it or going over it every month. Because it's not worth the stress of not being able to meet your budget because you own things that are too expensive or aren't worth it to you, that just don't provide the value. Look at some of those things maybe in your life that are a big outgoing item that doesn't meet your value. Maybe you're paying too much in rent because you two people living in a 1,800 square foot house. Maybe you can downsize, live in an 800 square foot house, save yourself $600 a month. Your budget becomes a whole lot easier to meet.
There's tons of different tactics, right? And like ways to get creative about either bringing in more money or cutting your expenses. But if you don't have a budget to know what you're spending on things, you've got no clue to what even to make changes on. And so to me, that's the biggest value that a budget brings about, is that it's the information.
I think that's one of the things as you're sitting down. It should reflect those primary values. And if it doesn't, that's when you start making changes and you start cutting things, you start shopping things around, you start making different buying decisions, and you reprioritize because you can take that trip next year if you really want to, if that's something you care about, if you budget for it and you can do it.
Yeah. Folks say that, like, there's so many things in life where folks are like, oh, I can't afford that. Well, it's like, well, you could afford that if that was something you valued.
Right.
So, for instance, a trip or travel or other, or saving for the future, saving for retirement. These are things that you could afford to do, but maybe instead you value something else. You value, you know, hanging out with your friends and going out. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just kind of being honest with yourself and paying attention to what you're actually doing with your money.
Right. Yeah. My friend Paula has a podcast called Afford Anything. And she says you can afford anything, but not everything. Mm-hmm. And one of the things she talked about was she went on a 3-month trip, I think to Indonesia or something like that. And everyone was like, how can you afford to do that? That's crazy. And I think I don't remember how much it cost her, but it was $5,000 or $6,000 or something like that for 3 months in Indonesia. And she's like, why does no one question when Joe at your work buys a $26,000 Hyundai, but everyone thinks I'm ridiculous for taking 3 months and dropping $6,000 to go to Indonesia. And I think that's exactly, that's exactly correct. And so many people, they think it's insane and that nobody can do that. Nobody can afford that. It's because you don't prioritize it. It's because you prioritize a 2016 Hyundai when really, does it align with your values? And it's okay if it does, but does it align with your values?
Yeah.
Constantly be questioning that. And I think that'll help make the budget process, having that end goal in mind and wanting your budget to reflect your values will help make it personal and help make it something that you can actually stick to and not feel like deprivation.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Matt, let's talk about the beer. So obviously the podcast is Pour Not Poor. We poured a beer earlier. It was Avery Brewing Company Tweak, a stout with coffee aged in bourbon barrels. It's 16%, so we might be feeling it a slight amount at the end of this podcast. What's your take on the beer?
Very delicious, incredibly well balanced. It's a little bit sweeter, which I like.
Yeah, it is sweet.
I kinda,
but a good sweet, not like a fake sweet. It's got this real nice like bourbon sweetness.
Yeah, it's like real, tastes like real coffee with like a little bit of, I don't want to say maple. It's not like maple syrup, but there's definitely like a sweet oakness to it.
Totally.
And it's just, yeah.
It goes down really smooth for 16%.
Yeah, so I picked this up when I was in South Carolina. When I was in Greenville, I was at the local store there and I saw it on the shelf.
Dude, you can't get the stuff here, man.
No, yeah, you can't get it in Georgia. And next time I'm up there, I'm going to pick up a few more of those. That's for sure.
So yeah, I would recommend picking up, if you see these in your local package store, pick up an Avery Tweak. It's a fantastic beer.
Still one of your favorite stouts ever, do you think?
I think it's up there. I think it's probably a touch sweet for my favorite. I prefer just a little more like dark chocolate and
some more bitter notes, maybe.
Some more bitter notes going on, but it's really good. And the coffee really balances it out and gives it a little bit of that bitterness. I'm a huge fan. And
yeah, it's pretty light on the coffee, huh?
Yeah. It could. I feel like maybe in years past there's been more.
Yeah.
And
I hadn't really thought about that, but I think so.
So I think Tweak's a beer they make every year, and it changes every year. And so maybe this year, not quite as much coffee.
It's like a little chewier, you know, a little sweeter. It's like a caramel cube or something in my mouth.
And that's totally how you know someone's a beer nerd, by the way, too, if they start comparing a beer to the beer of years past. So we definitely hit that. We're complete beer nerds. All right, so that beer was fantastic. Let's wrap up on budgeting, Matt. Mm-hmm. What are the main takeaways for people if they just want it? Budgets in 30 seconds.
Well, and for the first thing, budgets are just a tool. They're not some sort of weird cult that you're going to join. All it is you saying that this is what we're going to spend this month and deciding that before you actually spend the money. It's having a plan. That's step one.
And you know what? We have a plan in almost everything in life. Don't be afraid. Plans aren't bad.
Yeah.
Budgets are scary. Call it your money plan. Okay? Yeah. Maybe that's easier.
Yeah, absolutely. No budgets. Instead, we're going to have a plan for our money.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a budget.
And use the approach that's most comfortable to you. Test out a couple. Don't be bound by the medium.
And sometimes maybe it's just paper and pencil.
Right.
You know? Like, I mean, if you want to go that straightforward and not be distracted by some of the other aspects of the applications that are out there, man, just a pad and paper is all you need. Like, you don't need all these other tools to make it work. But essentially, start with your income, list out your expenses and your goals and what you want to spend on different categories for that month, and then track it.
Yeah.
Track it. And then if you see yourself starting to get too high and say groceries, well, maybe not get the organic avocado. Instead, you could... You know, dive towards the peanut butter and jelly or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, whatever it takes for you to keep your groceries.
If you got
to
eat ramen and PB&J for the last 4 days of the month to meet your budget, do it.
Nothing wrong with that.
You know? And always have that big goal in mind, because I think that so much helps the motivation and the stick-to-itiveness of a budget. If you can keep that big goal in mind in front of your face all the time, this is what I'm aiming for, and it's something that really matters to you, that helps the budget stick and helps it not to feel quite as much like a drain.
Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. Our home on the web is howtomoney.com. Check it out. We'll have our show notes up there for you.
Yeah, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening to your podcast.
Yeah.
We'd really appreciate it. All right, buddy. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.